Track 12, Musical Memories. Music definitely has the power to move us, doesn't it? Well, this time we can discover a bit about how composers have envisaged actual physical movement through their music. Prepare to be transported with Tony.
There are many ways of getting from A to B. Today we are going to explore some different forms of transportation through music. How have composers depicted different forms of travel? Obviously, our original mode of travel was under our own steam, as it were, using our legs for walking or running. This method of getting around is sometimes referred to as using Shanks's pony, which is believed to be a phrase of Scottish origin, derived from the part of the lower leg between the knee and the ankle, the shank. In the 1981 film Chariots of Fire, tells the story of two men who are world beaters in their ability to run fast. Harold Abrahams was a student at Cambridge University when he became the first person to complete the Trinity Great Court Run, running around the college courtyard in the time it takes the clock to strike 12. Eric Liddell, who was born in China to Scottish missionary parents, saw running as a way of glorifying God. The two men represented Great Britain in the 1924 Olympic Games, and both gained gold medals. Abrahams in the 100 metres and Liddell in the 400 metres. The film score by Vangelis has become synonymous with the theme of running. Let's hear a bit of it now. And while we're on the subject of running, why don't we also listen to a bit of the theme which always accompanies the coverage of the London Marathon? That was music composed for the 1966 film The Trap by Ron Goodwin, who incidentally would have turned 100 this year. I don't know about you, but I think anyone who takes part in the London Marathon, or indeed any marathon, is an absolute star. So what should come next, do you think? I suspect it should be horses, as man gradually harnessed the ability of animals to assist us in our daily lives. Who knows who first leapt onto a horse's back and realised the potential for swifter movement? And swift can certainly be applied to that well-known figure from the days gone by, the Lone Ranger. The man known only as the Lone Ranger was the sole survivor of an ambush on six Texas Rangers. The series relates the various escapades of the Lone Ranger and his faithful companion Tonto, who had saved his life. But for many people, the star of the whole thing was the splendid horse, Silver. The theme music for The Lone Ranger in radio, television and film is Rossini's William Tell Overture, premiered in Paris in 1829, as the overture to the last of his 30 operas. since when it has become widely associated with horseback riding. Moving forward in time, perhaps we should consider the bicycle as a mode of travel. Vehicles that have two wheels arranged consecutively date back to the early 19th century, with the first verifiable claim belonging to Baron Karl von Dreis-Sauerborn from Germany. The Baron developed his two-wheel, steerable, human-propelled machine in 1817, and on his first reported ride, he apparently covered 13 kilometres, or 8 miles, in less than an hour. Later on, of course, we in England had the penny farthing, which was popular in the 1870s and 1880s. The name came from the British coins, the penny and the farthing, the penny being much larger than the farthing, so that the side view of the bicycle resembled a penny, the front wheel, and the much smaller rear wheel represented the farthing. These bicycles had solid rubber tyres, and consequently the only shock absorption was in the saddle. Most uncomfortable, I'm sure. I imagine it was a rather more sophisticated bicycle, which the British composer and songwriter Henry Dacre had in mind when he wrote the song titled Daisy Bell in 1892. When Dacre first went to the United States, he took with him a bicycle for which he had to pay import duty. A friend of Dacre's remarked, "It's lucky you didn't bring a bicycle built for two, otherwise you'd have had to pay double duty." Dacre was so taken with the phrase, "a bicycle built for two," that he used it in his song, which is said to have been inspired by Daisy Greville, Countess of Warwick, one of the many mistresses of Edward VII. Let's hope this bicycle would prove more comfortable than a penny farthing. Otherwise, Daisy's answer would have to have been a resounding no.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you. It won't be a stylish marriage. I can't afford a carriage. But you'll look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two.
So far, we've only considered moving around on terra firma. But what about other surfaces? There's water, there's railway tracks, and of course there's air travel. Shall we have a think about water first? Waterborne craft have been around for millennia. Ancient Egyptians used boats, the ancient Greeks and the Romans were great seafaring people, not to mention Noah's Ark or the Vikings. But perhaps the most elegant ships were the magnificent sailing ships of the 19th century, as portrayed in the television series about a fictional shipping company, the Oneidin Line. The ship, named the Charlotte Rhodes, used in the series, was a topsail schooner built in Denmark in 1904, and the theme music is by the Russian composer Kachaturian, taken from his ballet Spartacus. The expansive melody perfectly depicts the ship sailing across the expanse of the ocean. Of course, seafaring vehicles don't only soar above the waves, do they? In 1966, the Beatles gave us the song Yellow Submarine, which we can hear a bit of now, written by Lennon and McCartney. The song was drummer Ringo Starr's chance to shine.
As we live a life of ease, every one of us has all we need. Sky of blue and sea of green, in our yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine.
And so we'll leave it there, I think, and when we surface next month, we'll head off on some more modes of transport and see where we end up.
Thank you, Tony. We'll look forward to more modes of transport next time.